I'm Paul Wiegraf, Director of the Delaware Division of the Arts and your host for today. Joining me by phone today, because he is extremely busy, is the General Director of Opera Delaware, Brendan Cook. Welcome, Brendan.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me, and by phone. I think all of us in the arts are extremely busy. So.
Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to join us today to talk about Opera Delaware's 75th anniversary season, one of the oldest opera companies in the country, celebrating 75 years. Let's talk a little bit about Opera Delaware's history to start.
Sure thing, sure thing. I mean, we're stretching these anniversary celebrations for 14 months, because darn it, I think we deserve to you know, celebrate a 75th anniversary. But we were started in 1945, right here in Wilmington, and you know, in the early days, it was a volunteer endeavor, and must have been a whole lot of fun to be involved with. In the mid 80s, we became a professional company and acquired our facility down here on the riverfront. And then the other major change that has happened over the course of these 75 years, is that in 2016 we became a festival opera company, which means that essentially we compress our artistic output into a smaller period of time, you know, hoping to lure opera lovers from the surrounding region to come spend a weekend with us. And I'm pleased to report that that's been very effective for us. But we've been reinventing ourselves for every single one of those 75 years, I mm-hmm. think.
And since 2016, in addition to the festival season, you also have some smaller activities throughout the year.
Yes, indeed. And I think those, you know, have frankly predated my involvement with the company. You know, we have this fantastic facility on the riverfront, and I think why would we not be using it for performances as well? We have expanded those programs, and I like to refer to the things that we do here as sort of the more casual sort of gateway drug to opera, for lack of a better term. So in our large rehearsal studio, we have these casual highlights evenings. This year they were called Opera Jukebox, where we get four or five fantastic singers and a pianist and offer some highlights, and then in the final section the audience gets to bid on what they get to hear. And the other performance line that we have here in our facility that's rather new is in our newly renovated Black Box Theater. It's about a 100-seat theater where we're able to sort of get off the beaten path a little bit and do a little more sort of risky and interesting programming. So we started that this fall with a program called Beyond Carmen, and we're actually going to have one of our festival offerings here in the Black Box as well. And the logic is we own the venue. We should be using it in every way possible.
Now, while we're on the topic of these kinds of performances, speak to the role that Opera Delaware plays in cultivating young opera singers. Because I think it's a very important role.
Yeah, I talk about this all the time, actually, about the importance of companies of this size. And I think what I'm about to say is kind of amplified tenfold by nature of our geography. You know, the reality is opera singers don't, you know, finish up at Juilliard and then just walk across the square to the Metropolitan Opera, right? There's another step in the process of their development. And I've given TED Talks about comparing the work that we do with AAA baseball. So, you know, you can see a very, very fulfilling operatic experience with names that you might not know yet, and that doesn't mean that that they're not developed fully in any way, but it means that maybe their career hasn't quite gotten you know, to the level of the Metropolitan Opera. Though I have to say that it's getting increasingly difficult for us to secure some of the artists that we want, because they're getting poached by the Met, and it's hard for the artists to say no to that. But I think that regional opera in general just plays an integral part in the development of a singer, because you refine your craft by doing, right? And it's you don't just learn all the stuff and then in school and then start performing it on the biggest stages. So we're a training ground in some sense, and I think that it's it can be thrilling for our audiences as well, because there are a lot of big name opera singers that actually made their debut here in Delaware. Eileen Perez, who's sort of the sweetheart of the Metropolitan Opera, one of the most in demand sopranos of our day, had her professional debut here. So it's a great thing, a great story for us to be able to tell, and it's really neat to see our patrons sort of almost take some ownership in that, and then follow these artists around the country.
It reminds me of the time when I was in college and our Glee Club director encouraged us to go to an opera singing concert one weekend because the soprano soloist was somebody who was going to be something someday, and it was Leontine Price. So
that worked out.
Yeah.
I think she did okay.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah, right.
So with Opera Delaware, with all these different activities, how do you go about planning and scheduling? Because, I mean, what you have done in your time here has really been to put Opera Delaware on the international and the national and international maps of opera. Talk about your programming and how you plan that.
Yeah, it's. I wish that there were a quick and clean answer to that question. The priorities change year over year, and I would say that in 2016, when we launched the festival idea, it had to be work that was going to grab the attention of opera lovers, and more importantly, I think, critics from outside the region that were going to write about our work and validate our work. And so the first two seasons of the festival were all about getting people to come to Wilmington, which I was critical, I think, to what we wanted to do. And we were able to get some wonderful third-party approval. We were on the cover of the art section of the Washington Post in an article that I stand by my theory that my mother actually wrote it, and Anne Majette just signed her name to it. I mean, it was very complimentary of the work that we're doing here. But those priorities tend to shift, Paul. So last year's festival, we sort of acknowledged that if you're not on the opera team, right, if you don't, if you're not already an aficionado, and you don't know necessarily whether Semiramide is a great tragic opera by Rossini or something that we take for cholesterol, we're not really serving as many people as we could. So last year's festival, we decided to take a deep dive into subject matters that we thought would be interesting to our own community. And last year's festival was all legal themed, given the very important industry, the legal industry here in our state. And so that the planning shifts based upon what we learn each year. And one thing that we're doing differently this year is we're offering more performances, because the feedback that we're getting is that by compressing our artistic output into two weekends, it's tough for some of our locals to give that kind of real estate up in their calendar. Mm-hmm. It's a busy time of the year, and if we only have two performances, which is generally our schedule, there's not enough time for people to even really talk about the work that we're doing and let word of mouth help our audience grow. So, the shortest answer to your question is that we try to listen to what our audience is telling us, and then try to program something that is going to be more meaningful to more people in our community, but also to have a little bit of something for everybody. So wherever you are on your journey to becoming an opera lover, we've got something for the aficionados all the way down to someone who's just sort of curious about opera. But the name of the game this year is trying to just simply mean more things to more people, and to introduce this art form to as many people as we can.
And what is your programming for this year's festival?
So the programming for this year's festival, for our 75th anniversary, is a festival that looks at the beginnings of opera, the height of romantic opera, and the future of opera, all under the lens of unfinished, because we didn't want our 75th anniversary to just be about patting ourselves on the back for being in business for 75 years. We wanted to make that statement that we're a living, breathing thing, and we're always looking for what's next. So the repertoire this year, we have Monteverdi's masterpiece, The Coronation of Poppea, which is really our first foray into Baroque work. And we're going to have four performances of that at the Baby Grand, at the Grand Opera House, the smaller 300-seat theater. And that's where we're really testing, by offering more performances, do we ultimately reach more people. The centerpiece of the festival is Offenbach's Tales of Hoffmann. And then the sort of new customer acquisition piece, if you will, is a new work called Speed Dating Tonight, which is by Michael Ching. And it's essentially a series of vignettes where the company gets to choose which vignettes we present based upon who's involved in the company. Hmm. So I believe to date he has written 65 different individual scenes, and we just sort of pick and choose based on what's appropriate for our artists. And the fun thing is he's even writing a couple of Delaware-specific dates for us. So folks who love Delaware and Delaware lore may really delight in the date called Scrapple Virgin. They might really appreciate that one. So but they're all pieces that were unfinished in some way, shape, or form by the composer. At least the performing editions that we know and love today were never really seen by the composer. And that holds true with Speed Dating because he's still writing it, even though it's been produced, I think over 100 times since he wrote it. It's sort of different every time. So
he's still writing. And am I right that Monteverdi must have been one of the early opera composers, if you're talking the Baroque period?
Yes, indeed. I mean, it was very, very early on, and it's interesting because he's been experiencing a bit of a renaissance, and I think that Maestro John Elliott Gardner is a big person to thank for that. He even sort of compares Monteverdi to Shakespeare, in terms of his importance to the art form. And I'm quoting an article in The New Yorker where he says both artists give fathomless depth to familiar tales. And we're talking the very, very early days of opera here. I mean, over 400 years ago, all the way up to what's current and still being written, if you will.
Yeah. Well, we have more to explore, but let me first remind our listeners that you are tuned into Delaware State of the Arts here on News Radio 1450 WILM and 1410 WDOV. Our guest joining us by phone today is the General Director of Opera Delaware, Brendan Cook. Brendan, we've been talking about your programming, your history. Before I forget, how do people find out more about Opera Delaware?
The World Wide Web is a beautiful tool, www.operade.org.
Okay, great. Thanks. Now, I want to turn to some amazing accomplishments you've had on the national scene. Recognition from the National Endowment for the Arts recently with grants to help support some programming that you've been doing nationally on radio. Could you talk about how the recognition of what Opera Delaware has accomplished is now putting you on the national scene?
Yeah, sure thing. So, we've been very, very fortunate to have 5 years in a row now of artworks grants from the NEA, and to throw some sunshine in your direction, of course. I mean, the support from the DDOA is critical to our work as well. But it was 2 years ago now that we were invited to participate in a nationally syndicated broadcast that is managed by the WFMT network out of Chicago. And essentially, what they do is that when the Metropolitan Opera isn't in season and not doing their live Saturday broadcasts, they syndicate material from other opera companies because they think that a lot of the public radio stations are accustomed to having opera in that slot. So they keep that programming going throughout the year. And we were invited 2 years ago to send our archival recording of Rossini's Semiramide, and it was very, very well received, to the point where last year they invited us to participate in three different broadcasts. And, you know, for us to be able to have that sort of national stage of going into more than, you know, 750,000 radios has just been really extraordinary for us to have that kind of exposure. And I can't imagine a better institutional marketing opportunity in terms of, you know, getting into the ears of opera lovers and, you know, enticing them to come to Wilmington. And, you know, one of the really fun things about that project that we've been able to do is sort of control some of the intermission content to an extent and talk about a lot of the other great things that are going on here in Wilmington. So, you know, not only has it been good for us, but we've really been able to sort of draw some attention to the what you and I know is an embarrassment of riches in terms of cultural assets here in this small and wonderful state.
Yeah, let me ask you this. Have you, as a result of these broadcasts, gotten any kind of feedback from people who have heard Opera Delaware on the radio that might not have otherwise heard you?
Yeah, we have. I mean, some of my favorite stories. I actually got an email during the broadcast of Semiramide from a gentleman who was a former board member of Opera Delaware but moved away, and we had sort of lost touch. And, you know, he sort of really took that as the, you know, as the impetus to get back in touch, and shared how proud he was of the organization. And it really just made him feel great about his previous involvement. I've fielded some calls from critics who called to say that they really enjoyed what they heard and wanted to make sure that we got, you know, that they got Opera Delaware on their itinerary for the spring. So it's not often, Paul, you know, in this crazy and most expensive of all art forms, where I mentioned before that it's so complex and expensive to produce that we really only get to do two performances of each production. It's very rare that we get to share any of that content, you know, after the fact. We don't really, this opera is not really for us streamable. You know, mm-hmm, you can't pause it. So, the opportunity to walk down memory lane a little bit, and the opportunity to really shine a light on the work that our artists have been doing. You know, it's a feel good project all around. But it, you know, I think it really has brought some new people into the fold who maybe were on the fence about whether or not to give Opera Delaware a try. It's just a great sort of validation for the work that we're doing. So it's been a wonderful project.
Well, and I think it's a great introduction to Opera Delaware, but I know you and I have talked in the past about this, that opera is perhaps one of the most multidisciplinary art forms there is, because it intertwines music with theater, with dance, and the visual arts. Could you speak to that and the value of seeing opera live?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think there's nothing like it, frankly, in that it really is just as you said. It's the collaboration of all the art forms. And I think that what you see on stage is really just the tip of the iceberg, right? And if you can go into the theater with that in mind, that, you know, what you're seeing is really the culmination of thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of collective work, you know, not even including what the artisans have had to do to prepare, you know, the set designers, the costume designers, the wig and makeup designers, they all have honed their craft, right? And then they come here and they spend all of this time and metabolic capital, if you will, for something that really only exists for 2.5 hours. And if you're not there, you know, it's not something that you can catch later. So I think, although it's expensive to produce, I think as a consumer and as a patron, it is one of the biggest value propositions that you can imagine in the arts. And magical things happen in live performance, as you know, and you can come to the same production two nights in a row and have a totally different experience based upon any number of factors. So I think the payoff for live theater is incredibly enormous if you give it a shot. But I think that anything today that requires you to show up at a prescribed place at a prescribed time, has its challenges. But again, I think that when you make that commitment to corner off a piece of your life and spend it with us in the theater, that investment is almost instantaneously very richly rewarded. So to me, there's just nothing like it, and it's a thrill, and it's worth all the effort, even the things that the patrons don't see, that have happened before they get there.
We've got about a minute and a half left, and this is maybe too big of a question to ask in the time that's left. And be kind, because my background is musical theater. Could you talk about the crossover between and the distinctions between opera and musical theater?
Sure. Lots of people, Paul, have lots of different viewpoints on that. And, some of my friends and colleagues might take me to task for what I'm about to say. I think there are pieces that are sort of in the middle of that Venn diagram that, mm-hmm. that could go either direction. But if I had to summarize it in a minute or less, by and large, musical theater is a text-driven art form, and whereas opera is maybe more of a musically driven mm-hmm. art form. And the other primary distinction that I would say is that, when you're just looking at the singing, musical theater, with the exception of like the golden age of musical theater, is generally amplified,
right.
And opera is not. So it requires a different technique. There are a lot of intersecting skills that are needed in both. But I think if you had to zero it into one thing, opera singers, hurl their voice over a full orchestra into a full theater without the aid of amplification.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one technique. And then musical theater, by and large, has a different vocal palette to choose from because they have the benefit of amplification. So it's much more complex than that, but that's the 60-second version.
Okay, and with that, we'll wrap up. Brendan Cook, the General Director of Opera Delaware, thank you so much for joining us. For our listeners, go to operade.org to learn more about Opera Delaware's 75-year history and the upcoming Spring Festival. Thanks so much, Brendan.
Paul, thanks for having me. What a blast to talk to you today.
Likewise.